Ladies and gentlemen, a warm welcome from my side. Thank you for joining us for the third quarter results call. In the line, we also have Robert van de Kerkhof, our Chief Commercial Officer. He will provide us with a market update. And next to me is also Cord Prinzhorn, our interim CEO. He will briefly introduce himself in a minute. Now, 2021 in a nutshell so far, we see a strong operating result despite the continued rise in costs, especially for energy, raw materials, and logistics. Revenues for the first 9 months came in with close to 1.6 billion euros compared to 1.2 billion in the year before. Our specialty share is now at 73%, that is basically unchanged compared to 2020. Our EBITDA actually more than doubled due to the positive market development. We are now at close to 300 million compared to 139 million the year before. Our net result after minorities and the interest for the hybrid bond is now at exactly 100 million compared to minus 3 million the year before, and earnings per share came in with 3.77 compared to 0.1 the year before. With regards to the key developments and the strategic highlights, actually, as you all know, the expansion program on the way is the largest in our corporate history, and it is basically on track despite a challenging COVID-19 situation. The project in Thailand actually largely proceeded according to schedule, despite those challenges from the pandemic. The high infection numbers actually we saw in July and in August, however, they did slow down our progress a bit. We have now started with the commissioning phase for the plant that will keep us busy actually for the rest of the year and also in January 2022. And once the commissioning phase is finished, we will then start up the plant. With regards to our construction site in Brazil, actually everything still on schedule to start up in the first half of 2022. And Cord Prinzhorn already briefly mentioned he was appointed our interim CEO after Stefan Dobotsky stepped down at the end of Q3 2021. Now with regards to outlook and guidance, actually whilst we are generally in a positive market environment, this environment, of course, remains characterized by a very high level of uncertainty and low visibility. And we also see quite some pressure on the cost side, especially from raw materials and energy and logistic costs as well. Now, due to the very positive development in the first 9 months for the year, and taking into the account the factors I just mentioned, actually, we continue to expect EBITDA in 2021 to reach a level of minimum 360 million. With regards to our 2024 targets, actually no change compared to our last presentation, of course. So just to repeat it, EBITDA for 2024 is expected to come in at the level of 800 million, ROCE above 10%, leverage below 2.5 turns EBITDA, specialty share above 75% of fiber revenue, and backward integration above 75%. And last but not least, CO2 emissions to be reduced by 40%. Now, let me hand over to Cord Prinzhorn for a short introduction.
Thank you very much, and thank you for inviting me to this call. Let me introduce myself for 2 minutes. I've been managing fiber-based and wood business in the past 15 years, and since I'm also on the board of the supervisory board of Lenzing, I was asked to step in with the change of management. I hold this interim position to facilitate the search for a new CEO and focus on the further development of Lenzing. since I will continue as a supervisory board after I hand over to a new CEO, I can then also build on the deeper relationship with the current strong team. In the meantime, that may take several months, a maximum up to 1 year. My focus in this time will be strong on the current strategy execution, especially on running the projects in Brazil and Thailand and completing them in the scheduled time, but also on all multiple smaller essential projects. Further on, focusing on sustainability development within the ESG framework, and also to focus on continued operational improvement and HR development, as both build the long-term success of this business. Today, I have to say I'm here as a guest to familiarize myself with the stakeholders within this community, and I take part as a guest as I'm taking over all agendas in the course of this week. So for today, I would like to hand over to this excellent management team, especially for the first part, I would like to ask Robert to take us through the highlights of the market development and the update for that. Thank you very much for this time and introduction.
Thank you very much, Cord. First of all, of course, also from my side, a very warm welcome to all the analysts on the call. I'm very excited to give you an update on where do we stand in the market. And before we talk a little bit about the numbers, the prices in the market, we'll be talking also a little bit about how do we want to make and shape the market with our brand strategy. Branding as such is something that we introduced in 2018, but branding can only come hand in hand with product innovations. The innovations we launched very successfully in the last couple of months are going into some of our key segments. On the left side, you can see the new denim offering. Denim is still one of the biggest woven segments in our textile industry, growing very fast, where lyocell initially was a kind of a niche application. Meanwhile, it's a standard component of almost every jeans. But the problem that we had with lyocell that we heard from the trade is that it's a bit shiny. So we have raised the bar. We've developed a matte tensile lyocell fiber. And with a matte fiber, the original look of the jeans is being restored, if I may recall it like that. At the same time, you know, there's still all the other sustainable and physical performance of the fibers they maintain. Very exciting development for a very important segment. Now, our commitment to science-based target goes beyond just what we do as a corporation. It also goes offering new innovative products to our customers down in the value chain. And we launched a true carbon zero fiber a year ago. We are very excited that we have now been able to launch a new carbon zero fiber that actually contains our Refriba technology. And as you recall, Refriba technology is a product in which we reduce the amount of virgin wood contents and then complement it with the circular cotton content of up to 30%. So this is a true circular product that now can be offered to our customers with a carbon zero footprint. That is very exciting. We get a lot of positive reaction from our loyal value chain partners. For instance, Jack and Jones is now using this carbon zero tensile fiber in their collection. So great innovation at the right time, but also based on very clear indications from the market. On the VSL side, the non-woven side, we've seen a continuous growth throughout the year of COVID. Of course, the personal care aspect, the hygiene aspect became very visible in the COVID pandemic. And that has definitely boosted overall use of non-wovens. Our VSL brand is fairly new. We only launched it in 2018. It's a brand new plan. We then actually activated quite aggressively only in the last 1.5-2 years. The decision from the European Union, as we communicated already during the last quarter regarding the single-use plastics, where VSL and lyocell were clearly not defined as a plastic, gave us really a great opportunity to educate consumers that our VSL branded wipes would be completely sustainable products are plastic-free. Also, other segments where for VSL where we see significant growth will be in the beauty care segments in Asia, it's at this moment extremely popular to use facial masks, and they are branded with our VSL. We have just signed a new contract in Hong Kong with a big retailer there, and you'll see the VSL brand. Therefore, in the wipes products in Europe and Americas, which also see it increasingly in Asia on premium products like VSL. So great progress on the branding side. Now, if you look on the next slide, besides the work that we do internally, we also, of course, work with scientists external and saying, are our fibers as good as we claim they are? And they are doing their research to really address the major concerns that the current world is facing. And one of the major concerns is all the plastic, the microplastic that can be found in the oceans. In San Diego, there is the Scripps Institute of Oceanography, which is one of the most reputational universities in the world, that has done an extensive study on the various products that are contained in wipes and how these products behave over time in a marine environment. And what is very clear that after 30 days, our limping wood-based fibers, and here they took the viscose and Modal, but also the Lyocell products, have completely biodegraded in 30 days in marine conditions. If you compare this to a wipe that is based on fossil fibers, and here we're talking mainly, of course, about polyester and polyprop, these fibers are, after more than 200 days, still there. In fact, the condition of these fibers has not even changed. So that is a major advantage that our fibers have for applications such as wipes. And I think to have this confirmed by an organization as Chris is something that we can be very proud of. This will also boost the further, of course, introduction of the VSL brand name. On a corporate level, on the next slide, you'll see that also there our performance continues very strong. And if I look at some of the most important ratings, MSCI, I'm sure you have already seen it, has now given us a double A rating. This is something we are very proud of. It puts us in the top 6% of the peers. And, you know, this is quite a big group, which includes corporations like Dow. But to be in the top 6% is something that I think we can be very proud of. This MSCI rating has a positive impact, as you know, also for our bonded loan of the $500 million that is actually linked to the rating. So by this improvement rating, my dear colleague, Mr. Obendrauf, doesn't need to pay as much interest. And what we have committed is that interest will not go in our pocket, but we will donate this slight reduction in interest. We'll donate to a good foundation that we will announce shortly. Now, that, of course, is something that we are very proud of. Also, because if you look at why did MSCI rate us with a double A rating this time, is because they truly recognize our ambitious climate targets that we're making very good progress on. The fact that we as a corporation, both in our product innovation, like with the Refiba technology, but also in other commitments, are really stressing the circular economy. And we also have exceptionally good governance structure, which are, the three main reasons, therefore, for the upgrade to a double A. In the past, I could always report to you that from an EcoVadis perspective, we were gold. Now I'm very proud that we can now say we are in the top 1% of the EcoVadis rating with a platinum status for the first time. So this is really also something that I think is increasingly important for the growth that we have ahead of us. Now, considering all these very positive news on the market from a rating perspective, from a branding perspective, how does the market actually look like? And on the next slide, you can see that the retail market, and this is now the textile retail sales, are continuing to be quite volatile. You've seen, of course, the huge collapse back in April last year when more than 60% of the retail sales dropped due to the pandemic and the lockdowns. It recovered. We then started off the year with a significantly better performance than 2019. And as you can see now, we are roughly again at the level just before the COVID crisis started. So we're still at roughly 2019 level. It came down a little bit in the last couple of months because consumer confidence is also impacted by the ongoing impact of COVID. The Delta variant, of course, is creating quite some concerns. The stimulus payments in some of the key economies are currently running out. But we also see some tightening government measures in some countries. So all of these factors contribute to a lower consumer confidence. We can see that this moment that the apparel retail sales, which reflected here, is slowing down. But of course, exactly the same trends you can see in the much broader retail sector. If you can then see what happens in the textile fibers world, the textile fibers world have gone through a very bumpy road. If you can go to the next slides. The textile fibers world has gone through a very bumpy road. If I look at cotton, cotton came from an extreme low from May 2020, its lowest point since a long time, and has now skyrocketed to an extremely high level. Overall, the cotton price is supported by the very good fundamentals. Production is firm. At this moment, we can see that overall demand for the cotton products is very strong. Some speculative buyers, some traders are buying at this moment more cotton products because they expect that what they buy today, they can sell at a higher price later. So all these factors currently contribute to a very strong cotton price. On the viscose, Thomas mentioned it already in his introduction, you can see the viscose price really taking off after the main markets in Europe and the United States opened again post-COVID. Viscose prices rocketed at a time then that the market started to normalize a little bit. Prices actually came down to a fairly low level just a couple of weeks ago. And in the recent period, it went up very steep because of the adjustments in China that I will elaborate on in a few minutes. If you look at the overall dissolving wood pulp prices, they've seen its peak early this year, specifically around May, and at this moment they are slowly coming down, but still, as already mentioned, at a fairly good level. The polyester prices, it's of course the biggest fiber in our industry, has also gone up, mainly driven by high oil prices. This is expected to come down a little bit in the next couple of months, but polyester, as you can see, is still at a fairly good level. Now, what happened with the viscose market? You can see on the next slide that the viscose prices have gone up very steep. Profitability, as you, the light green bar, I think you're very familiar with it, I've shown that most of the standard viscose producers in China made a very nice profit after a very long period of loss making. The boom came because inventories throughout the value chain were extremely low. At that time, also quite some capacities were still a little bit shut down post-COVID. Demand was strong. Meanwhile, most of the production started to go up again. We saw inventories throughout the Chinese market at our viscose competitors increasing to over the 35 days, which is very high. Inventories now have come down, mainly driven by ongoing demand and, of course, a significant reduction in China because of the energy restrictions. So various viscose fiber producers had to reduce or even shut down complete lines. And that, in combination with also the higher raw material costs, resulted in even lower production. The current operating rate in China is at around 56%. If you compare this to the last five-year average of 80%, you can see that that this is something that is not sustainable for the Chinese industry. What happens is that inventory level is coming down. We're currently talking about approximately 27 days, still above the level I personally feel comfortable with. The long-term average here is about the 19 days. So, but overall, you can see that the viscose market remains volatile. Now, how does this viscose market look like then on the next slide versus all the specialties? The average 6 months forecast, this is what we show here, shows that I'm very confident still that the lensing specialty strategy is still the right strategy to follow. What you can see here over the longer period, because this slide is going back to 2017, is that the cotton prices start to drop in 2019, of course, continued in 2020 to its lowest point due to COVID. But then suddenly, because of the points I mentioned earlier, now is at an extreme high level, the cotton point. At the same time, you can see that the viscose prices dropped very fast. Then because of the peak that we saw earlier in this year, it skyrocketed again. But now you get the normalization again on a 6 months moving average. The lending specialties overall, they remain very high. We managed to keep the prices higher when the cotton prices started to drop in 2019. Because we have a fairly stable price policy, which our value stream partners, so the spinners, fabric producers, but specific brands and retailers, they really appreciate our stable pricing strategy. We, of course, follow still the trend of the industry, but with a certain delay. So you can see that we've not increased as fast as cotton, but we're very well on track to increase the prices further. And I think that is a trend that will be able to continue. If you look at now the overall market, I feel therefore very confident as consumer demand is there. The trends for consumers to sustainable products is definitely in our favor, but also then combined with branding and with some of the sustainability trends, I think we're very well positioned. Here with our hand back over to Thomas to give us an update on the projects and the financials.
Thank you, Robert. Let me now continue with our big projects, and let me start with the project in Brazil. In a nutshell, the project actually remains on time and in budget. For all those who were in the call also 3 months ago or 6 months ago, I think it is obvious when you look at the picture that we made tremendous progress over the last couple of months. So actually everything according to schedule. There's just one thing I would like to highlight. Our joint venture partner, formerly called Duradex, changed its name. The company is now called Dexco. So that is the only major change on the key facts here. All the other key facts, of course, unchanged compared to last quarter. Moving on to the project in Thailand, I think I mentioned already the most important topics there. We have already started with the commissioning process, and the commissioning process will keep us busy for the rest of the year and also in January 2022. And once completed, actually, we will then, of course, start up the plant accordingly. The key facts as such all remain unchanged. CapEx actually unchanged with 400 million euro. Now let's switch gears and move on to the financials. And let me start as always with revenues. Revenues in Q3 came in with 555 million euro. That is a 44% increase compared to the quarter, the Q3 in 2020. The increase, of course, driven by significantly higher volume, but also by higher prices. Year to date, we are now at 1.6 billion compared to 1.2 billion the year before. Our fiber revenue by application is now back at the level that you saw before COVID-19 actually hit us. So we were always in the range of 70% for textile fibers and around 30% for non-woven fibers. And basically, we are now back at that range. With regards to our specialties share of fiber sales, actually, we are basically still above the 70% threshold, with 72% slightly below the quarter before, but well within our target. Moving on to earnings, and let me start with EBITDA there. EBITDA for Q3 came in with 80 or close to 80 million compared to 43 million the year before. That is, of course, a significant increase year over year. However, it becomes obvious actually comparing to Q2 2021, of course, a drop compared to last quarter. EBITDA margin for Q3 came in at 14.4% compared to 11.1% the year before. Year to date, we are now at close to 300 million compared to 138 the year before. EBITDA margin year to date close to 19% compared to 11.6% the year before. Of course, the drop in Q3 basically driven by higher raw material prices, higher energy costs, and last but not least, higher logistic costs. Moving on to EBIT, and of course we see the same development there as we saw for EBITDA. EBIT came in for Q3 with 39.3 million compared to 3.7 million the year before. Again, a significant increase, of course, year over year. However, sequentially, of course, a drop compared to second quarter 2021. EBIT margin for Q3 slightly above 7%. Year to date, we are now at 11.2% compared to less than 2% the year before. Moving on to net profit and earnings per share. Net profit for the quarter came in with close to 19 million compared to a negative 4.3 million last year. Earnings per share at 0.71 compared to a negative 0.16 the year before. Of course, those numbers are all after minorities and interest expense for the hybrid bond. Year to date, we are now exactly at 100 million compared to a negative 2.8 million the year before. Moving on to cash flow and trading working capital. As you can see here on this chart, our gross cash flow and operating cash flow for the last three quarters actually hovering around the level of around, let's say, 100 million. Free cash flow, of course, still negative in all those quarters by 100 million or even more. What is the driver for that? Of course, the huge CapEx program we are implementing now in Brazil and in Thailand. At the bottom of the slide, you can see the CapEx number per quarter. Actually, we now have four quarters in a row with CapEx exceeding 200 million. With regards to trading working capital, also here, no big changes actually. In absolute numbers, we are, as always, actually hovering around the level of around 400 million. And in terms of in percent of annualized group revenue, we are slightly above 19%. Last but not least, some key numbers from the balance sheet. Let me start with net financial debt. Net financial debt for Q3 came in with 806 million. That is, of course, reported net financial debt according to IFRS. If we adjust for the guarantee from our joint venture partner for the Brazilian project, we would end up with the so-called economic net financial debt, which is now at 510 million. Of course, in total an increase. However, that is the result, of course, of the negative free cash flow we saw on the chart before. With regards to total assets, actually increased by more than 20% compared to last December. So more than 900 million or actually around 900 million in increase. That, of course, all comes from the CapEx. Liquid assets are still very high with slightly more than 1.2 billion. And our adjusted equity very strong with 2.1 billion compared to 1.9 billion the year before. Adjusted equity ratio slightly down, of course, as a result of significantly higher total assets. With regards to our liquidity cushion, we are at a level of 1.7 billion by the end of September. That is, of course, slightly less than by the end of December. That, of course, is the result of the huge investments we are doing in Brazil and in Thailand. Now, let's have a look at the remainder of the year. Given the very positive performance during the first nine months, we continue to expect EBITDA to reach at least a level of 360 million. Of course, market environment remains to be characterized by a very high level of uncertainty regarding the COVID-19 pandemic. Of course, it remains to be seen how input costs actually will develop over the next couple of weeks and months. Actually, we saw quite some increase in energy. However, since the peaks we saw back in October, of course, price level has come down quite a bit. Nevertheless, it remains on a higher level so far as before. Logistic costs anyway, that is something that we see for several quarters now. And probably we will have to live with higher logistic costs for another two or three quarters. With regards to commodity fiber pricing, actually, those prices actually peaked back in March. Thereafter, we saw a phase of lower prices. However, actually, as Robert elucidated, they are now back at higher levels. And with regards to dissolving wood pulp, actually, they have declined a bit. However, they are still on a relatively high level. Overall, actually, we expect continued increase in demand for sustainably produced fibers for the textile and apparel industry, as well as for the hygiene and medical industry. And with regards to our focus, of course, the strategic focus is now on finalizing the projects in Thailand and in Brazil, as elucidated before. It's now about commissioning and then starting up the plant in Thailand. And then, of course, the same is true for the project in Brazil. And with regards to our operational focal points, actually unchanged also compared to a quarter ago. So we will focus on pull marketing. We will focus on continuous improvement, operational excellence, and cost management. With regards to our strategic milestones, actually, all the major decisions have already been taken. I think that we already communicated when we presented our half-year numbers. So decision on the Modal fibers expansion was taken already. Then also the conversion of commodity viscose into Lenzing Ecovero fibers, that decision also was made. And also the further steps to decarbonize the portfolio, I think we communicated already a quarter ago. The only thing that remains now open is the commissioning of the lyocell fiber plant in Thailand and Delft that is already on its way. And as I said before, it will keep us busy for the rest of the year and probably also in January 2022. With that, actually, we are at the end of our elucidations and we open the floor for questions.
Ladies and gentlemen, at this time, we will begin the question and answer session. Please note that questions are only possible via telephone. Anyone who wishes to ask a question may press star followed by one on their touchtone telephone. If you wish to withdraw your question, you may press star followed by two. If you are using speaker equipment today, please lift the handset before making your selections. Anyone who has a question may press star followed by one at this time. One moment for the first question, please. The first question is from Christian Veit from Kepler Cheuvreux. Please go ahead.
Yes, thank you very much. I have three questions, if I may, please. One, certainly to Cort as the interim CEO, if he can answer that, if he has time to answer that. Cort, what are your key priorities during your interim phase as CEO? That would be helpful to know. Then can you quickly comment on the COVID-related issues you have been facing with the Thailand project? Is that still ongoing or is everything basically on schedule again? And then third question, sorry. I noticed looking at CCF that the current lyocell price is rather close to the VSF price. Can you elucidate that a bit? Thank you very much.
So to your first question, of course, I can reiterate those key points. In short, the main priority is to finish the current ongoing project, which we have shown, not just the big ones, but also multiple other projects which we have dire need of finishing. The second priority is for sure to reconfirm and also execute the strategic process of continuing where we're going, so confirming the strategy. And the third one is to focus on operational excellence, which shouldn't be just limited on the word operational. It touches all areas, which is an ongoing process Anyhow, we have projects in purchasing, in sales optimization, and to give support to those. So these three priorities all the way to HR are key for the next few months. But of course, as also pointed out in the presentation, the key projects in Brazil and Thailand have absolute priority. And we have to balance still running the rest of the business as profitable as we can. So don't take it as one or the other. It is a major effort, and this is why I'm here to support the search for a management structure of the future.
Thanks, and all the best for your tenure as CEO.
Thank you.
Then I will take care of your second question. It was related to the COVID-19 situation in Thailand. Actually, as you all might know from media reports, Thailand saw actually a huge increase in COVID-19 infections starting in July and actually peaked then back in August. So actually with very high infection rates, of course, it also had implications on our construction site because we also we did a lot of testing, of course, or we still do a lot of testing at the construction site. So we also saw a high number of infections for our construction workers. However, we always managed with the authorities to continue on the project. Nevertheless, actually, we had to implement a so-called bubble and seal concept that had to be applied for exactly 28 days. And that actually ended somewhere around mid of September. And since then, everything is back to normal. So actually, we are very grateful to the authorities for allowing us to continue our work, even though, of course, this bubble and seal concept did slow down the overall progress, of course, because priority number one is, of course, the safety of our people and of our workers.
Thank you. Very helpful.
And then let me take the last question, Christian. When you mentioned the two products that are coming close together now, that this both have a certain reason why they are closed. Number one, the DSF price is fairly high, as mentioned in the presentation. It's high because it starts, of course, with pulp. Pulp is, came down a little bit, it's still at a healthy high level. We've further seen increases of certain other raw material costs, and as a consequence, the VSF price is fairly high. On the lyocell price, the lyocell price in China is driven, I think, still by a few producers, so it's not so representative yet as the viscose. It is driven by, let's say, companies that have just entered the market. They are really struggling to commercialize. So what we've seen with the Chinese lyocell competitors is their projects have been to some extent delayed, but specifically when you look at them, the commercialization, they are struggling when it comes down to quality. So in the past couple of months, while Lenzing's lyocell is an extremely strong demand, we see weaker demand for the local domestic competitive lyocell, and they are currently trying to reduce their inventory levels by extremely aggressive pricing. So that's the reason why the delta between the two products is fairly small at this moment.
Okay, thank you. Very helpful, Robert.
The next question is coming from Isha Sharma from Stifel Europe. Please go ahead.
Hi, thank you for taking my questions. What is the impact of the current developments in China on your operations, and what are your expectations going forward? The second would be, is it fair to say that the VSF prices are right now supported at least partially by these developments? And if so, to what extent can Lenzing's increased specialty portfolio offset any normalization during the next year?
Let me take the first question. I mean, as you all know, actually, China has implemented a couple of measures over the last couple of weeks, aiming actually at those industries that consume a lot of energy. So far, the overall impact for us has been, let's say, fairly limited. Of course, we are in constant discussions with the authorities. However, so far, the overall impact is really, really small. And how this thing will continue, of course, I mean, just to add one more sentence, of course, this remains to be seen. This is difficult to predict, but so far the impact, can only repeat what I said, is fairly small.
Is this because of your location? Sorry, just following up on that. Is this because of the location of the plant? Because the particular province is not impacted? Because there have been several VSF producers that had to reduce operations, just trying to understand the dynamics here.
Look, I mean, I think there are a lot of factors, a lot of parameters that play a role if you're impacted or not. I mean, of course, we are in exchange with many other companies as well. And what we hear is from, let's say, complete shutdown to no impact at all. So the range is very big. And what we also see is that actually it's not necessarily linked to the size of the company. And there is also no difference between, let's say, wholly foreign-owned enterprises and Chinese enterprises. So actually, the rationale behind, I think, is probably very much dependent on your location. That's it probably.
Yeah, and let me build on that when you say to what extent the current GSF prices are impacted by that. That uncertainty, as Thomas described, which company is infected to what extent, as that is not clear, of course, is creating some concerns in the market. And as a consequence, the Visco's demand is, at least by the downstream traders and players, is increasing. So the uncertainty is definitely driving up the viscose prices. Inventories are still fairly high, but nobody knows how long this will take. The energy concerns that let's say the world is confronted with is fairly bad at this moment, and we're just still ahead of the winter. So therefore, prices are boosted by this. From our portfolio perspective, we are very well on track. We have at this moment in China a very healthy product portfolio already. Our Ecovero production are really going extremely strong. We are producing as much as we can based on the current asset park. And of course, also the other quite profitable business that we had from a viscose perspective in China is the non-wovens industry. Also, that product at this moment is strong in demand and very well produced. I think from a product optimization, we are very well underway.
Right. And just last, maybe just to follow up on this one. So on the specialties portfolio, you will probably reach even closer to 100% by the end of 2022, given the change in your operations in China and Indonesia. Just trying to understand what kind of impact that might have on the pricing and if you will be able to offset certain normalization if it might occur at the VSF prices.
If you're now talking about specifically China, we are very well on track. We, of course, have also there the Modal project. So from a corporate perspective, we will not achieve the 100% specialization, of course. One big site that we are really investing in for greening up the production is, of course, in Indonesia. And there we are also well on track with our overall project. But there we still have some standard products. And there we expect only in the next 2 years of 2023 to have the Ecovero production starting.
Thank you very much.
The next question is coming from Sebastian Bray of Barenberg. Please go ahead.
Hello, good afternoon, and thank you for taking my questions. My first one is a minor one, but on Thailand. Is this a delay to the startup by a few weeks relative to the expectations set out in H1? My feeling is the answer is probably yes, but I just want to double check. My second question is on the 2024 guidance of 800 million of EBITDA. I'd like to probe this a bit further. I assume that Lenzing is assuming a DWP price in line with the $900 per ton. Is it assuming a viscose price and lyocell price approximately equal to where market levels are at the moment? And is there any additional lyocell capacity baked in for 2024 beyond the 100 kilotons that are due to start making commercial sales in Thailand at the start of 2022? I'll pause there and I have one follow-up.
Okay, then let me start with your first question on Thailand. Yes, okay, we are. There is a small delay compared to the original expectations. However, we are talking here weeks, not months or quarters. So actually, and as I elucidated before, the reason for the delay being the COVID-19 impact we saw mostly in July and in August. There was a smaller one also in May, however, actually that one actually we could so far, at that point in time, we could digest relatively easily. So yeah, it will shift to the right by a couple of months, but that's it basically. Does this answer your question?
Yes, thank you.
Then on your question on 2024, I think the overall target of the 800 million, I think we mentioned that a couple of times, the overall target of 800 million, I mean, where does it come from? Of course, we expect a significant contribution out of the project in Brazil, and with the numbers we have mentioned over the last couple of calls, I think it is relatively easy to figure out what our expectation is versus the Brazilian project. That is number one. Number two, actually, of course, there are specific assumptions behind that with regards to our viscose industry. And what you have to keep in mind is all the steps that we have already taken so far, be it now especially the project that has been initiated at the beginning of the year already in Indonesia. And the same, of course, is true for our plant in China. So actually, in 2024, there will be hardly any commodity viscose left, because according to our timeline in 2023, actually we should be able to finish the conversion of our Indonesian side to 100% actually specialty viscose, and the same is true actually earlier already for China. So there should be hardly any commodity viscose left, and therefore actually we also would expect, let's say, our viscose side to contribute accordingly. And last but not least, of course, we also expect quite a contribution, of course, out of our specialties, be it now with T3 or with our Modal line conversion in China.
Just to clarify, though, to get to 800 million, you don't need an incremental 100 kiloton expansion in Thailand beyond what is coming at the end of this year, start of next year.
That is not included, actually, in our numbers, no.
That's understood. And a final question, just as a lyocell market update, what is, on your estimate, the current market capacity, and how much do you expect this to go up by, including Lenzing's own 100 kiloton addition over the next 2 years?
If you look at the overall lyocell capacity, we expect that our competitors will, of course, continue to invest. We have, I'm looking also here at Thomas, I'm not sure to what extent we quote the detailed numbers about our competitive capacities. Because what we expect, what we've seen in the past, our competitors have announced quite a lot of expansions and not actually, how shall I say, being able to deliver on time, and also, as I mentioned, not being able to deliver on what is what has been promised to the market from a quality perspective. But we expect another 120 tons roughly to come into the market in this time period.
Just to clarify, let's say that Lenzing at the moment, I can't remember the exact number, I think it's about 230, maybe 260 kilotons of capacity, and the market if you add up all the other producers, is, as a rough guess, 350 to 400. What you're saying is that over the next 2 years, you'd expect 100 kilotons from Lenzing to come to market and about 120 kilotons from assorted other peers. Is that fair? Or?
Yes. Thomas?
Let me just clarify. I mean, the capacity that will come from Lenzing is, of course, our project in Thailand that actually has a nameplate capacity of 100 kilotons, and that, of course, we will reach over time with debottlenecking. However, besides the capacity that Lenzing will bring to the market, competition will bring, of course, capacities to the market as well. So for 21, we would expect roughly 100 kilotons coming from our competitors, and probably for 22, 100 or slightly above that level. However, actually, what you have to keep in mind is, I think Robert mentioned that in his earlier elucidation, that is capacity. That does not necessarily mean market demand.
That is understood. Thank you. And just to ask on your earlier point, Thomas, related to debottlenecking capacity, when I think about modeling this plant, when you turn it on at the end of this year, it has 100 kilotons of capacity, or it doesn't quite have that much and you need to debottleneck to get there?
It will be close to that, actually. I mean, look, I mean, whenever you set up a new site, you need to twist and turn here and there and then just to make it happen. There might be, I don't know, one or the other incremental smaller capex necessary for that. However, we are not talking here a big money or so.
That's understood. Thank you for taking my questions.
The next question is coming from Matteo Cataldi from Exane BNPP. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon. I have two questions, please. The first one is wanted to check regarding the expansion project in Brazil. I've noticed that you removed the guidance for the cash cost, and you just mentioned that the vertical integration was a big part of your bridge to 800 million EBITDA in 2024. So I wanted to check if the higher energy and logistic costs are impacting the estimated cash cost, and what are your current expectations? And the second question I have is if you could please provide an update on the CEO search, if you have already started interviewing people, and if you're focusing just on internal or external candidates as well. Thank you.
So let me start with question number one on the project in Brazil. I mean, I hope I fully understood your question. I mean, your question was about if we foresee any impact on the profitability of the project out of, let's say, maybe a higher logistic costs or other cost increases. Is that correct?
Exactly. I remember the cash cost being around $300.
Look, I mean, of course, I mean, as I elucidated during the presentation, I mean, the higher logistic costs actually is not a Lenzing specific phenomenon. That is something that we see actually, or that probably you have come across actually for all the companies you are dealing with. And it's only a question on what is the degree of impact you see. And actually what we, for example, see as Lenzing as a group at this point in time, we see, let's say, huge impact for our logistic costs in Asia. However, we see less of it, of course, still an impact. However, the impact is smaller for, let's say, from Europe to Asia. So that is one thing I would like to mention. The other thing is, The Brazilian project will go live next year in the first half of 2022. As I mentioned in my presentation, yes, we would expect logistic costs to be high at least for the next three quarters, so Q4, Q1, Q2, Q4 this year and Q1, Q2 next year. However, at least in the mid to long run, Our expectation would still be that logistic costs come back to a level maybe not as low as we saw before the crisis, however, at least significantly down from what we see at this point in time. So that's it on the Brazilian project. On the CEO search, I'm just now looking at Cord. I'm not sure, Cord, you want
it's
to...
It's very simple. We are in the process. We started immediately when we finalized the negotiation with the former CEO. The search is ongoing. Yes, we are searching internal, external, any qualified candidates on a wide scale, and the process is ongoing. Further, is any comment I cannot give right now, since we expect the timeline maximum, of course, within the year to finish. I hope that we can finish perhaps even within the next 6 months and conclude at least and finalize who it will be, but more we cannot give in terms of information right now.
Perfect. Thank you very much.
The next question is coming from Bartek Pastava of Schroders. Please go ahead.
Hi. Can I ask you to comment on your cost pressures at the moment in Q4? What else are you seeing? Because obviously Q3 was affected by that to a large extent. What sort of hedging have you got for this quarter or next year? More importantly, in which parts, please?
With regard to the cost pressure, I think there are two things I think you need to keep in mind. I mean, on the energy costs, I think you have access to a lot of data that show the development of gas prices, power prices, coal prices. Depending now on the plant we are looking at, of course, we see a different degree of impact. So, for example, in our site in Indonesia is dependent on coal, and of course the Asian coal price increase, of course, has an impact on that side. We have two smaller plants in Europe that highly depend on gas. So of course they are impacted by those price increases respectively. Our largest site actually, or our, at this point in time, largest site, which is at Lansing, is an integrated site. So actually we do have a pipe mill here, and therefore also an energy surplus which is used at the fiber plant. So actually, the largest site as such is only impacted to a fairly small amount. So that is one thing you need to keep in mind. And the other thing, I think what you also need to reflect on is actually we are at this point in time still a net buyer of dissolving wood pulp. And I think elucidated a couple of times that actually there is a time lag for higher pipe prices to become visible actually in our P&L statement. So actually at the end of the day, there is a time lag of around, I would guess, 4 or 5 months actually until you see an increase in dissolving wood pipe prices in our P&L statement. But that is one major contributor in Q3. And next to pipe, it would then be energy. Then it would be probably some other raw materials like CS2 and that kind of stuff. And of course, last but not least, logistics. However, the logistics topic is anyway already pending since the crisis started, or almost since the crisis started.
I'd put it this way, what sort of hedging have you got in place for next year for DWP, for energy, or the other way around? I mean, if you answer that, but also on top of that, at current DWP pricing, what sort of margin would we get at current pricing of your fibers and DWP, or what sort of margin at EBITDA level will we get?
We are not guiding now on margins or on our expectations for 2020. We will only do so as usual, actually, once we release our yearly numbers for 2021. However, actually, what we are doing, of course, I mean, that is the hedging strategy we have with regard to dissolving wood pulp is our backward integration, of course. At this point in time, we do have a pulp capacity of around 600,000 tons. So it is slightly more than 300,000 tons here at the Lansing site and slightly less than 300,000 tons at our Paskov site. However, Lansing has a nameplate capacity for fibers of around 1 million tons. So actually, we are a net buyer. However, with the project in Brazil, we will be adding 500,000 tons in dissolving wood pulp. So actually, next year, once Brazil is up and running, we will be actually 100% backward integrated. We will still be buying in the market, so we still do have long-term contracts in place with our major supplier. However, at the same time, we will be selling softwood pulp to the market. So that means once Brazil is up and running, well, except for, let's say, some minor timing differences, we will be 100% hedged with regard to exposure to dissolving wood pulp prices.
Right, but the 500,000 tons in Brazil, that is, that's on a 100% basis, and that's not your share, or is that your share?
Sorry, again?
The 500,000 tons capacity in Brazil, that is on a 100% basis, that is for the project itself, not your share of the project.
Yes, that is correct. Of course, I mean, we only own, let's say, 51%.
Exactly. But
of course, we will, as the project is fully consolidated in our financial statements, of course, you will see the full impact of the EBITDA and so on in our group financials.
No, sure, financials, but the economic interest is not there. I mean, it's only there to 55-51%. That's what I'm sort of saying.
The economic interest, then, of course, you have to deduct below the net income you allocate to minority shareholders.
Okay, good.
Okay, of course, you have to adjust.
Okay, any hedging you've got on energy side for next year, please?
On energy, we historically do not hedge because actually our view on energy costs it is not a Lansing specific topic. So if energy costs go up, they usually do so on a global basis, or in most cases on a global basis. So actually, there are no hedges in place at this point in time.
Okay. Okay. Thank you for that.
Ladies and gentlemen, if you would like to ask a question, please press star followed by the one on your telephone. The next question is coming from Teresa Schinwald of Raiffeisen Bank International. Please go ahead. Teresa Schinwald, please ask your question now. It seems like she don't have a question anymore. There are no further questions at this time. If you want to ask a question, please press star followed by the one on the touchtone telephone. One moment for the next question. There are no further questions at this time. I would like to hand back to Thomas Obendrauf for closing remarks.
Then thanks a lot for your participation in this call. Stay safe, stay healthy, and we are very much looking forward to talking to you then once we release our full year financials for 2021. Thank you very much.
Thank you all.